Fat man. You shoot a great game of pool.
So do you, Fast Eddie.
Welcome to Out of Theaters, the podcast that reviews the movies of yesteryear, this year. It's been a while. My name is Billy Culpa. I'm here with my good friend and film critic, Will Pfeiffer. Will, hello.
Billy, it has been a while, but it's good to be back.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was nice. You know, turkey, stuffing, all the fixins. I like Thanksgiving. It's
Pilgrims,
a very laid-back
Indians.
Holiday. Well, my sister-in-law is a Native American, so technically, yes.
I apologize for my offensive language.
She always makes a joke about, you know, oh, what a holiday. Ah.
Seen any good movies lately?
I have seen a couple good movies lately.
Would you like to tell me about them?
I will, yes. I saw the movie The Arrival.
Oh, the new one.
Yeah, also, I guess it's just Arrival.
It's just Arrival.
There was a Charlie Sheen movie called The Arrival back in the 90s. This is... just arrived.
Like an alien movie?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right.
But yeah, this is the one with Amy Adams. I should look up a few more details on who is behind this
2016.
Movie. 2016, brand new at the theater.
Jeremy Renner.
The kid was up at Grandma and Grandpa's. We actually saw it the day before Thanksgiving, so I was thankful to see a movie in the theater with my wife. Directed by Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve. I don't know.
I apologize, Dennis, but he also directed the movies Prisoners and Sicario, which are both got a lot of buzz, which I haven't seen, but now I really want to see him. Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker, friend of the show, Forest Whitaker. Remember, he was in Fast Times Ridgemont High?
He's okay.
But it's a very sort of, I hesitate to say realistic movie. But it's a movie about what if aliens came in contact with Earth. In this movie, 12 ships come and giant ships that kind of look like half of a coffee bean or something. They're not like steel or anything, you know, and they're just very smooth, but they come in and land and hover vertically above 12 different cities all over the planet. No one can figure out what the pattern is.
I heard that it ends up, they're just random. They just like, one of them's like Montana.
It is. Well, Montana is the one we focus on the most because that's the one in America. And so they contact Amy Adams, who's a linguist.
They don't, the U.S. government.
The U.S. government contact, yeah, in form of Forest Whitaker. Contacts her to figure out, we don't know what these people are saying, what these aliens are saying, and we need to know.
So I don't, probably can't go too much further. I haven't seen it. I've read reviews. I get the premise of it. I heard a very, very good, insightful analysis of this. When you go to like Sherman Williams.
Yes.
And you say, I want an orange wall.
Sure. Okay.
The person who you said that to can think right off the top of their head like 30 different shades of orange.
Right.
And they can go, do you want sunrise or do you want, you know, melon dew or something, whatever.
Okay.
You know?
Sure, sure.
And the word orange opens up this whole idea and mental capacity to that person, where to you and me, and really not you and me because we're graphic artists,
we know.
But to normal people.
Right. They're like, I want orange.
Is it Illinois or is it Miami? You know,
exactly.
Whatever. So, the idea is that language opens up sort of perception.
Right. Well, I will say this without spoiling it. At first, they try and do this spoken language. And what I really like about this movie is these aliens are alien. They don't have eyes or two legs or anything like that. They look, if you had to describe them, similar maybe to squids, but even that is kind of making the more human.
Yeah, yeah.
Or more, you know, these, they look,
you're
like
anthropomorphizing.
Exactly.
Way more than you.
They
mean.
Look alien. And their sounds, at first she's brought in to translate, they have like a recording of them. And she's brought in to translate that. And the way they speak, and I'm putting speak in quotes, is you can't even tell what words, paragraph. I mean,
you can't tell.
Yeah. It's just like sound, almost like a, not like a mechanical sound, but it's just, it doesn't sound like any kind of speech. So what she does is she decides to go and try and figure out if they have a written language. And that's where the key comes in.
Sure.
And a lot of the movie is sort of them writing things and her and Jeremy Renner trying to figure out what they are. And getting back to your Sherman Williams analogy.
It's not mine.
I know.
I think I read that on Vox.com, but I love the idea that it was actually an election piece. About how,
I think I saw that.
You know,
same
when
piece.
The president uses very small words, it really constrains our perception and sort of. Anyway, it was it's an interesting way to look at it.
Well, and the key to this movie, without giving anything away, is this. Apparently, this is a real theory. I've never heard of it, but I guess it makes kind of sense in the abstract. Is that when you learn a new language, even just a language like Spanish or something, your brain is slightly rewired. You think of things in a different way, maybe, if you really sort of absorb that language. And so when she learns a certain amount of the language, her, and only her because she's kind of running point on this, she begins to see things in a different way, in the way the aliens see it. And that unlocks sort of the key to the whole movie.
Sure.
And I mean, up until the halfway point or maybe, I'm like, this is really good, but I don't see why everyone is really praising this movie. I mean, I've seen good movies like this before.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with it.
Seems fine. It's a good movie.
But it does this thing that I don't want to spoil.
Yeah.
And then it casts the whole movie in a different light, including scenes you saw of her, other parts of her life, like not related to the alien invasion or aliens.
Yeah.
And sort of the secret to how they unlock the mystery. It's one of those scenes where, at least for me personally, it's not an action scene, but as it's happening, I was really excited. I'm like, oh, I can see what they're doing. And I was like, this is really exciting to watch this happen.
You know, so in a movie like The Sixth Sense, it ends with a twist ending and you go, huh. And now when I watch it, I think it makes it worse. I actually don't
You think the twist?
Yeah.
I think
it makes sense and it was awesome at the moment.
Right.
But it's ruined repeat viewings. I just don't care.
I mean, and a lot of people, you know, I kind of agree with you on that.
Will the Arrival? Or I'm sorry.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you another thing about this movie is, I mean, think of some people comparing this to 2001.
Okay.
Which I think we would all agree is a very sort of intellectual movie.
Yes.
You know, I know you didn't like
it's... I love that movie,
but
Will.
It doesn't give a lot of emotional connection in that movie, in 2001.
Yeah.
This movie, at first I thought it was going to be very intellectual, but by the end, and when you see how everything fits together, it really is very emotional, but not in a cheap way. It ties everything. My wife was crying at the end.
Wow. Wow.
It's really... I mean, it's one of the best movies I've seen on here. It's really good. It's really smart. And it doesn't, there's no fist fights. There's no stupid, laser fights.
There's not
an
alien ship chase with Air Force One.
None of that, no. There's one point.
Randy Quaid doesn't say, hello, boys.
Hello, boys, I'm back. No, there's one part where two of the, because it's all military operation, and two of the soldiers kind of take it upon themselves to do something. And it doesn't really cause, it's a small thing, and things go bad because of it, but it's not like that's the whole end of the movie. That's just sort of a little thing that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the Arrival. Really good. And Amy Adams is, I mean, I think she's a really solid actress, but this is her movie, and she really makes the most of it.
Mike Stoklasa from Red Letter Media said this. He's a huge Star Trek fan. He said this is
a Star Trek movie. It is. I saw his review, yeah.
Yeah, he said essentially there's not going to be a film that's more pure sci-fi, that's like cerebral or emotional or whatever, that's not a dumb action movie in his lifetime. This is it.
This is
peak sci-fi.
He's right. But I will, for a movie that doesn't have action, like I'll say it again, when this twist that I would love to talk about, but I don't want to because I don't want to spoil it, when it kicks in and you kind of see what she's doing, it's more exciting than like a million fight scenes. Just the smartness of it.
Did I tell you what language I studied in college? And let me ask you first, did you study a language in college?
I did not. I took 3 years of Spanish in high school and I know virtually nothing.
So I didn't take any. I took German for like a quarter in high school, but I was a terrible high school student and it didn't work out. And then when I got to college, I failed Spanish twice. So in Illinois, maybe it's changed, but when I went to school, I graduated at 07. You had to have 2 years of a foreign language to get a Bachelor of Arts.
Oh, okay.
Period. I think you could bypass it with music or something.
We were able to bypass it with a logics run, so I
sure.
did that. Yeah.
You had a way to... So I went to a community college, and then I did 2 years at a university, and my 2 years was like very compacted. So I failed Spanish twice and only had a year left of school and was like, oh my God, I can't graduate. Like I didn't have enough summer credit. There was no way to do it.
Right.
Until I found out that if you took Indonesian... You could do it in 1 year.
Because it was hard?
I don't know. Because it was considered like an exotic language.
Oh, okay.
And it gave you more credits than normal. It gave you, like, instead of 3 per semester, you got 4 or 5 or something. I think you got 5.
Okay.
And it was every day for an hour, which was actually great because you never got to forget it.
Right. That's good. That's better with a language.
And as it turns out, this is a mini riff. I'm sorry. Indonesian is an amazing language because the Dutch ran Indonesia until like the 60s.
And the Dutch are the worst,
yeah,
to be honest.
And Indonesia declared its independence and the Dutch didn't fight them on it, but they only had one stipulation. Like I forget the year, it was like 67 or 61 or whatever, but they said, you have to speak this language, this trade language, because otherwise we can't work with you. Like, we need to, you know, and it's kind of like China, how there's 1,000 versions of Chinese.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Indonesia is kind of like that. So there's this one trade language called Bahasa Indonesia,
mm-hmm.
and it's literally English with different words.
Really?
So, like, I only remember a few phrases, but, like, the word I is saya.
Okay.
So when you put a sentence together, you just switch words. You're just memorizing words. So, like, saya benci, I hate Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian language.
There you go.
Saya benci Bahasa Indonesia. It's just a word-for-word replacement. It's amazing.
See, now that language,
I got bees.
According to the theory, well, congratulations. according to theory in this movie, I don't think that would rewire your brain.
No, it didn't at all. Nope.
Because this one, it's all, there's a whole thing about how it's circular, and so it really makes your brain kind of think differently.
I assume this is more like Lord of the Rings, where they had to, like, memorize elf language, and then when they moved it, you know, when the movie ended, everybody went, I don't know how to speak elf anymore.
But it's all in the, as far as the translation, it's all written.
Sure.
It's all, they don't try and talk.
I'm not trying to talk. I was just trying to be humorous.
No, I know.
Okay. You know, you gave me a documentary that I tried to watch.
Oh, the Val Lewton one?
Yes. And I tried to watch it today, and I realized that my laptop here does not have a disk drive.
That's right. It's neither does mine.
I thought you would enjoy that I wanted to watch your physical media. I sat down, I got to this recording 2 hours in advance because I was going to watch that. And it went, oh my God, I got a new laptop at work. No drive.
Sorry, Billy.
I tried to.
It's a good movie, though.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. What's it called?
Val Lewton, the man. I think it's called The Man in the Shadows. It's
Scorsese produced it.
Right. And Val Lewton's a guy who did Cat People and I Walk with a Zombie. A lot of great movies in the 40s. He had a very short run, but classic horror movies. And you would like this because it talks about sort of why the movies work and his philosophy behind them. And
why that light source came from here. And
Fair enough, fair enough.
All right. This week's movie.
That's right. Black and white, like Val Lewton's movies.
1961, The Hustler.
The Hustler.
I just want to say right off the bat, this movie is goddamn fantastic.
Oh, all right, Billy.
why don't you kick us off? What is The Hustler? And if you remember, why are we watching it?
I honestly don't remember why we're watching it.
I don't either. I think we just said
we wanted to pick an older movie.
I put us in the 90s too much.
Yeah.
So
I think we decided, because we're going to do this or maybe 12 Angry Men or something.
Yeah,
The Hustler. And it's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Paul Newman, the legendary and late Paul Newman, plays Fast Eddie Felsen. Paul Newman's a friend of the show because we did Slapshot.
I don't think that's how friend of the show works.
Works on my show, buddy.
Okay.
But Paul Newman, he plays Fast Eddie Felsen, a pool player who goes around and hustles pool with his buddy.
Early 20s? Mid-20s?
He's in his mid-20s. Paul Newman, good-looking guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, loaded with charisma. And so he'll go into a pool hall, pretend he doesn't really know how to play pool that well. Sort of, you know, he gets the guys to challenge him to a game. It's all half of the art is being able to get people to challenge you to the game and put money on the table. And then he'll beat them and take the money, playing it off as luck if he can, so, you know, they don't know they've been hustled. But he plays on. He's very cocky, you know, and
he's like you.
Well, yes, that is the first and last time anyone will compare young Paul Newman to me. But he meets up with, he wants to play Minnesota Fats, who's a legendary pool player, played by Jackie Gleason of Honeymooners fame. And
I still don't know what that is. Oh. But
well, he is. But Jackie
I Googled
Gleason
that.
Is one of the biggest, especially when this movie came out. He was, you know, he had been one of the biggest TV stars in the world. You know, the Honeymooners it's a pretty legendary show.
At the time, was he like a big TV star right in the middle?
I think this might have been after the Honeymooners. Although he was on TV off and on for a long time, but he was a huge star at this point.
Honeymooners, 1955. Was it only 2 years?
Yeah, it's a very short run.
55 through 56. So
yeah.
This happened 4 or 5 years
four
after
five
that
years.
Was over.
But he was still known for that. And he was in a lot of movies and stuff.
Sure.
He was a big star. So he plays Fats, Minnesota Fats.
Minnesota Fats.
And they play for a long time. And eventually, the thing is, they both have talent. But as they say, Eddie doesn't have character. And he's too cocky. And he's too sort of desperate to win and desperate to beat Fats. So he goes downhill. And without going into too much detail, he eventually, sort of after he's lost everything, he hooks up with this woman played by Piper Laurie. Sarah, and she's kind of a broken woman herself.
Yeah, I was actually shocked at how far they pushed her.
Right, she's,
in this era, I mean, she's like a flat-out drunk.
Yeah, she's a complete alcoholic.
I mean, like, an on-screen, like, they talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like, she's going to go to treatment. I mean, she's a I've never seen a character that was that much of a drunk in any of these old movies.
And Eddie at this point is kind of a drunk, too. So he wants somebody to kind of be a drunk with together.
He's a fun drunk.
Right. And she's like, just a sad.
He's portrayed as a fun drunk.
Yeah. And although it's kind of pathetic, too.
It is pathetic. But he's portrayed as, like, having a good time. Yeah, you're right. There are sad times. He shouldn't have had that drink when he played Minnesota Fats.
Right. And she's more of a she's like smarter. She was a college student.
She is a college student. She's actively in college.
And she's an older college student. So she's like, you know, kind of past her prime. And she's not as – I mean, Piper Laurie, she wasn't like Hollywood beautiful or anything like that. She's kind of plain looking.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I mean, not unattractive, no, but not like, you know, like normally.
She wasn't cast in like a Marilyn Monroe role.
Exactly. They didn't throw some babe in there. I mean, she looks kind of, you know, she fits her character. By the way, my father-in-law, Pete Strutz, one of the greatest movie fans I know, he always had a thing for Piper Laurie.
Interesting.
I know. Isn't that weird? I guarantee when I tell him we watch The Hustler, he'll be like, oh, Piper Laurie. But so, Eddie, he plays, I'm sort of jumping around, but he eventually, you know, he's desperate for money, desperate to play pool, and he sharks these guys, and they break his hands. You know, it's pretty brutal.
Break his thumbs, yeah.
You know, and so he spends a lot of time recuperating, and then he's with Piper Laurie, and they've, you know, they develop a relationship.
They domesticate.
Yeah, they do, and she's happy that he's not going out playing pool all the time. You know, she likes having him around, but then eventually Eddie gets the cast off, and he knows he wants to go play pool, so he hooks up with Burt Gordon, played by
George C. Scott, who is, I mean, I have lots of things to ask you about this movie, but mm-hmm. The casting in this movie is awesome. These guys are really, really good.
They are. I mean, yeah, Paul Newman, Jackie Gleason, George C. Scott, Piper Laurie.
The four of them are perfect.
Yeah.
I think at the beginning, there's a manager.
Yeah, Charlie Burns, his like older buddy. He's like older, and he's kind of
I thought he was a little like, you could see he wasn't quite as good as the rest of them.
Well, he's not nearly as charismatic.
But he had roles.
I mean, yeah,
and he has a big key scene where he ditches. That's it. When he leaves, you know. And he didn't seem like he belonged with this crowd. But whatever, I'm
great. No. And so George C. Scott is he's very smooth. He's not a nice guy at all. And he tells Eddie, what is he? He wants 75% of his take or something?
I think that's what it is.
Like, he'll stake him money to bet.
I think Eddie at one point says, there's a quote where he says, 100% of nothing is worth less than 30% of something.
Right, exactly.
So I think it's 70-30.
It's something, it's something insane. But then he hooks him up and they play with a rich guy down at the Kentucky Derby. And I mean, I don't want to get into too much, but eventually something happens between Bert and Sarah, and things go bad, and then Eddie sort of ends up where he was at the beginning with Fats and
but he's learned some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not quite. He's sadder and wiser.
That was not a very tight construction of the plot.
No, and it's not a tight plot though. I mean, it's more of a character piece.
Well, I was criticizing you,
but I know
what I would say is that there's two things happening. There is a plot, and it is interesting. But there's also sort of this. Watching a man grow with experience, and those experiences are some I just didn't expect any of them in a movie in an era like this.
It's a very adult film.
It's very grown up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, did you let Allie watch this?
Yeah, we watched it together. She didn't pay much attention. Although I kind of told her what happened, and she kept saying, "When are they going to break his thumbs?" I mean, the thing is with this movie though, because it was in 1961. A lot of the stuff sailed right over Allie's head.
Sure.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. And there is a lot of like, it's like pool is a metaphor in this movie, or billiards, or you know, whatever. This movie was made because the director kind of lived this life a little bit.
Right. Robert Rossen? Is that? Yeah. Robert Rossen directed it.
Yeah. And so did Jackie Gleason.
Yes.
Both of these guys sort of like were tough New York City kind of kids who grew up playing this life, and so they turned into a movie, which I wanted to bring up because it reminds me a lot that the movie that I first saw that reminded me of this is Rounders.
I would say that, yeah.
Where you have, you know, the actual poker is just a metaphor for, you know, the problems these guys are facing. And
Paul Newman is kind of a combination of Matt Damon and Edward Norton's characters in Rounders. He's the likable guy, but he also has no self-control at certain points.
I totally agree with that. Yeah. He can't, although Ed Norton's character in Rounders doesn't ever learn. He just leaves.
No, yeah, exactly. This one, I love it because when he plays Fats, they play for how long?
25 straight hours. And that's before Fats gets it. And then they take a break.
And then they take a break.
And all Fats does is like wash himself.
And he's like, and then Fats, Fats essentially washes his hands, comes in, sprinkles a little water in his face, and then he just takes Eddie apart.
And Eddie calls, he's like, you look just like a little pink baby, he says to him, and then he kills him.
Fats is great, though, because, you know, Eddie's playing him, but Fats respects Eddie. Fats isn't like the bad guy here.
No.
Fats is like, he's a good, you know, he's a great player. He believes in the game. He wants to play against somebody who can play at his level.
The bad guy is George C. Scott.
Oh, yes.
So George C. Scott is a... I thought he was a local hustler, like but it seems like he's just sort of a grifter who found the best pool player he could and then he's
got the money. Yeah, he'll bankroll the best pool player. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Minnesota Fats is like Jackie Gleason, who I like I said, I've never seen his comedy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good.
He's
very serious. Did you ever see I didn't see it, but The Gambler, I think it's with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh no, I know what you mean. I didn't see that though.
So John Goodman plays the George C. Scott role.
Okay, the steak horse role.
Yeah, who's like, he's mean and snarly. And John Goodman's been a comedy guy. It was Roseanne, right? I mean, like...
Oh, yeah.
And he's in Monsters, Inc.
Well, sometime we should watch Barton Fink. John Goodman is in that. He is terrifying at the end of that movie. Terrifying.
I've never even heard of that movie.
That's a Coen Brothers
movie.
And
he's terrifying in...
10 Cloverfield.
10 Cloverfield.
Uh-huh. John Goodman's great. Because he can turn on that.
He is so good. And he's the George C. Scott character in The Gambler or whatever, where he's bankrolling. Anyway, I don't know what George C. Scott has over Minnesota Fats, but Minnesota Fats, who is good and competent and respectable, there's something weird brewing where
because at first you think Fats is the big guy,
but
and then you realize he's not. He has
no
power against
at
him.
All. No, he can I keep playing? Should I stop? And George C. Scott says, this guy's a loser. Keep playing.
Yeah, keep playing. George C. Scott, by the way, let me just say this. He has one of the great dick moves of all time in this movie is when... This is when Eddie starts getting a little nervous, getting a little angry as he's playing Fats, and he's lining up a shot, and George C. Scott's right in his line of sight, and he goes, hey, buddy, you've been sitting there all day, and you're in my line of sight, can you move? And George C. Scott moves his chair like 1 inch and then sits back down.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, it was so great.
It's funny. George C. Scott isn't that old. He's maybe 30 in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems like 50. He seems like wise and mean and...
He's George C. Scott, my wife a year ago or so read a biography of George C. Scott, and he was not a nice guy.
Yeah, you can
tell. He was a mean guy, but he's a great actor. I mean, we haven't even done a movie like Patton, or one we should do is Anatomy of a Murder, and he plays the prosecuting attorney in it. And he's around this era, and he's like great. He's like sharp and fast. And
our run of Out of Theaters movie selections has hit a point where I'm not even recognizing the titles you're saying anymore. Like, I don't know what these are. I've heard of The Hustler.
Yeah.
Let's watch it. You know, so I guess I got to open up my mind a little more. He's up $18,000 after 25 hours.
Did you look it up? I'm dying to know.
142 grand.
What about that?
Almost 143.
What about that?
$143,000. You know,
in one day of playing pool.
You might say I have a mild gambling addiction.
I'm not going to go out there, Lynn.
I have I've spent some time in some casinos, friends.
Billy's a degenerate gambler.
I have definitely played for 11, 12 hours straight of blackjack. That's happened.
Uh-huh.
I have lost, I've lost a lot. But let me tell you about one specific example where...
I love this. I can listen to this all day.
I brought $200 to a casino, which is, I mean, whatever.
$200 matters. $200.
I mean, but it's not.
But it's not, yeah.
And I brought that money up to like $1,300.
Nice.
Playing blackjack. And I texted my wife and was like, here's the deal. I've been away like 9 hours. I'm very sorry. I'm coming home. And I know the children are probably awake now. It's like 3 a.m. or whatever. Like, I have won this much money. I will give you this much. And she's like, okay.
So you're bribing your wife.
No. I'm sort of, well, kind of. But it's also an accountability.
Uh-huh.
Because I can't come home with less than that now. Like, I have to pocket the part that I said.
Right.
And I played and I got it up almost another grand over the top of that. And I was going to text her.
But what if you had lost that?
Hold on.
Okay.
I was going to text her again at like 5 a.m. and be like, hey, so I'm up this much now. And I thought, I don't want to wake her. And I lost everything except the part that I promised her in the first place.
Oh.
Within like a half hour. I lost. I remember the story. I lost like 21 consecutive hands of blackjack.
Can I just tell you this? The house always
wins. The house always wins. I know. I should have went home. It was like 5 a.m. I was like, what am I doing? This wasn't that long ago. So don't tell the wife.
You are fast, Eddie Wilson.
Let's not tell the wife this story, guys. Okay. Just keep that. But
good thing neither of our wives ever listened to this show.
That's true. My wife has never listened. She's listened to me edit, and she's annoyed because it's loud. She's like, I can hear you upstairs. Turn it down. So it's worth telling, though. I tell that story because watching Eddie in this one 25-hour scene, which, by the way, we're at like minute 30 of the movie.
Yeah, it's early. It's early very scene early. In the movie, yeah.
And we see there is a rematch later that the director was really smart. He only played the ending like 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever.
Because you've seen it. You don't need to see it again.
You
don't need to see it
again. You know, I mean, you know. But 30 minutes of the movie, we're at hour 25, and he says, Fast Eddie says, give me a drink. And everybody says, don't do that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile,
what does he order? He orders this specific drink.
I don't even know. They hand him a bottle of Jack.
Yeah.
He just starts drinking out of the Jack. I was like, have you ever done that? I've never
that
done
would
that.
Kill
but
me.
It
yeah.
hurt my stomach looking at it. And from that point on, he loses $143,000.
Right.
I mean, granted, it's only 18 then, but he lost my house.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
I know.
And it's hard to like think about it in that perspective, but he just. And he can't stop.
Oh.
He gets down to the last, like his initial scratch. And I think he does leave with that. I think he leaves with his initial $100
yeah.
or whatever,
I think,
whatever
yeah, some tiny amount of money.
Yeah. And as it turns out, his manager, who I keep for Art something, what was his name?
Oh, I don't remember. It's his original manager, right?
Yeah, yeah. The guy who, it turns out that guy did take like his.
It's Burns, isn't it? It's.
I'm looking up the full cast and crew. I'm
Charlie.
Sorry.
It's Charlie.
It's Charlie. Yeah, yeah. Charlie Burns. Myron McCormick. Charlie Burns took his portion and maybe a little more. And so he didn't actually lose all the money then. I don't know if you caught that. Like,
Yeah.
Because later on. Because
then he gets mad and he's like, I could have used that.
I could have used that at the time.
Yeah.
And Charlie was like, no.
Yeah.
good. It's a good manager. Anyway, it's a pretty cool scene. And up until that point, all we've seen is this one guy and his obsession. It's interesting because he wants to be good. He wants to be good at pool, and he is good at pool.
Yeah, but, he wants to play the best.
But he doesn't just want to be good at pool. He needs validation as a
right.
Human.
He needs,
he needs to feel like he's. In my case, I bring up that gambling story because it's important. I was like, man, I can pay car payments with this, or I can. You're thinking, you rationalize all this dumb shit when you're gambling. You know, like, oh, I can buy a new bed for the kid, or I can, buy, you know, you whatever dumb shit you which you're making up. You're making it up.
Of
as
course you,
play. You
are,
but you don't. You're in this weird void, and you could see it. I could just watch Paul Newman's face, and that, which is why this movie hit me so hard. I was like, dude.
That's it. That's very interesting.
I've been there. I know exactly what you're doing. He's like, if I just get on a roll, I'll win back. It's like.
Yeah, of course.
My God. It's horrifying. Anyway, the whole movie's about Paul Newman up until this game ends.
Right. Yeah, because it's all Paul Newman. And one thing I love about this movie is I love how it puts you in this world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if these were sets or actual pool halls.
They were actual pool halls.
You just feel like you've entered this world and you are there with people who have lived in this world.
They all say no gambling everywhere.
That's great. That's great. They all say no gambling. Every time someone's talking about money, there's a no gambling. There's also like a no masse shot just when somebody makes the masse.
Is that the jump?
It's when you hit down on it.
Oh.
And it goes, it's a great shot, but. Pool halls forbid it because you can wreck the table doing it. Yeah.
Well, these guys won't, but
I know, but it is. And just the feel of that. And then when he meets Sarah and they're like in the bus station, I mean, it just feels so, I mean, obviously that's a real bus station, but it just feels like that world.
Is it Penn Station? Is that where they're at? They go to like a diner.
Yeah, maybe it's Penn Station.
Paul Newman's funny because he's all
tired. It's
kind
of crap. It's too crappy in a way to be Penn Station.
He doesn't have a place to live. You're right. He doesn't have a place to live. And she calls him out. She's like, you live at the bus station.
Yeah.
I know that. I've seen your locker.
Yeah.
And because she drinks all night.
Yeah, and then she comes in the bus station and just sits there. And
eats and orders an egg sandwich or whatever. Yeah. And it's weird. I don't have as much like passion to talk about Sarah and her story.
Yeah,
I don't know
if
you really want to get into that.
I mean, I know why they did it and it works, but during the Sarah parts, I'm like, let's get back to the pool hall. Let's get back to the pool hall.
Right.
Mostly because George C. Scott and Paul Newman too, but George C. Scott and Jackie Gleason are so charismatic. It's just fun to watch them.
They do a very good job in this movie, though, with what's her name again? I'm sorry.
Sarah.
They do a good job with Sarah making her story matters, and her character is not, she is not the like hanger on, like the whining wife character.
No,
that,
not
you know,
at all.
Who's, oh, don't play for me. Like none of that. Like she's got her own problems and
And you learn about him. Yeah, you could feel like she had a full life up until she met Eddie. You know, I mean, she had her issues and
her dad pays her rent and pays for her university. It's like as long as she goes the once a week, she's good.
It's such a sad life she's got. Yeah. And Eddie comes in and I mean, you know, Paul Newman, though he's living at the bus station, Paul Newman's always kind of up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he always, that's kind of, I think, his personality, too. But, you know, Eddie, he's fast Eddie. He's always up.
I wouldn't mind going back and watching hockey movie.
Slapshot.
Slapshot again. And sort of like having a different take on Paul Newman. Because I think I remember that episode and you and Kevin were just like flabbergasted.
I do love that movie. Yeah.
Like you love him. And for me, it's like Paul Newman was only the old guy in Road to Perdition. You know,
yeah, he's you know, you got the Sting and you have Butch Cassidy, you have Hudsucker.
I haven't seen any of that.
But I'm saying is they're great. He's great in them. And excuse me, Color of Money, the sequel to this that Scorsese directed in
86,
I think. Yeah, it was in the 80s. You know, and it comes back with I don't think that movie's nearly as good as this movie. But I want to watch it again because I kind of want to see, like, Fast Eddie.
It was 86. It's fascinating that they made a sequel 25 years later. I actually think that's cool. Like, it's sort of preface. And it's not like a soft reboot.
No.
It's a direct sequel.
It's a direct sequel. Although there is, but I mean, this fits thematically where Tom Cruise's character is kind of like Eddie, where he's got talent, but he needs to, you know, Paul Newman says to him, like, you know, you need character. And he's like, but you said I was a character. He's like, you are a character. You need character.
In Rounders, there's two female characters. And they're both the, like, hanger on, don't do this.
Right.
The one is his girlfriend. I don't remember the character's
name. Gretchen Maul. I know. She was on Boardwalk Empire.
And she just gets up and leaves him.
I kind of like that. I like a movie where the guy does not go with the girl at the end.
I agree. But it's not his she's the one who initiated it, which I like.
But he also is kind of like, well, screw it. He doesn't seem that broken up about it.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. And then there's the...
Famke Janssen.
Jansen. I don't know her.
She was in Pierce Brosnan's first Bond movie.
Oh, well, those seem great.
But she was pretty good in it. She's in the X-Men movies, too, or she was. She was Phoenix.
Dr. Christmas, nuclear physicist.
That was it Merry Christmas? That was Denise Richards.
Merry Christmas.
God. What was it? That was Denise Richards. Starship Troopers, friend of the show.
Oh, Denise Richards. Yeah, I love her.
Oh my God, the picture of Denise Richards looks like something that was grown in a vat. Christmas Jones.
Jones.
The Hustler, though.
The Hustler, man. What did I miss? What should I have asked you about this movie?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, it's not a complicated movie, but it's one that you can return to and find new things. And you know, just like I said, I love entering that world.
And you don't have to give a crap about... I was going to say the poker, the pool. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. It's fun to watch.
It's fun to watch that they actually did their own shots.
They Gleason did too.
And Newman, like they made sure the camera shows you. Like,
hey. Yeah, you see them do it. And there's a couple. There's the one shot you don't see Paul Newman sink is almost better because it's when it's at the beginning when he makes this. He's drunker than he is, and he sets up this whole bet. Like, I can make this shot, and they're like, and he misses it a couple times, and then people are like, I'll take that. They put money down, and then. You see them behind, they don't see his face, and you see the look on his eye, and he's like, here goes. And you don't see the ball going, but you just hear, boom, and you know he's sunken.
And he does it like 8 times in a row or something after that.
Yeah. That, what he did to the, when he gets his thumbs broken, that's when he shows off.
Yeah.
And he's like.
He can't help it, and he gets mouthy. Yeah. He can't stop talking.
I know, that's his trouble. He didn't have character. Jackie Gleason says almost nothing.
He doesn't say anything. He has that line, we're going to use it for the cold open, where he says, you know, you're a good pool player. He says, you are too. I want to talk about the Kentucky Derby scene.
Yeah.
Where
I know you've never seen Jaws, but the guy they're playing pool with is the mayor from Jaws, by the way.
Okay. No, I haven't seen Jaws.
I can't believe that. We'll definitely have to do Jaws.
I've never even seen it like on TV. I remember being a kid and talking and hearing and thinking about Jaws.
Yeah.
Like it's
what was the most popular movie in the world at one point before Star Wars, you know. We should do it. It's a lot of fun.
Pre-Star Wars. Oh, I thought
it was 75, yeah. No.
All right.
It's Spielberg's first big movie.
He goes to the Kentucky Derby. George C. Scott. This is after Eddie's had his thumbs broke, and he's sort of at the down part of his life, and he wants to come back up. He wants to like get back in the game, and he leaves Sarah. Well, he brings Sarah with, but he's thinking about abandoning his domestic life.
Right, but he brings her along, and
yeah. And George C. Scott says, all right, well, I got a guy for you. And he brings him to the Kentucky Derby, and he plays this rich guy who plays a variant of pool, a billiards.
It's like, yeah, I can't remember.
I think they call it billiards, but yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
There's no pockets for some reason.
Oh, is that how it works?
I can't yeah, it's maybe a British variant? I don't know. If you're a billiards expert, please let us know.
Yeah, I'm a degenerate, but in a different game. I learned how to play craps a couple weeks ago, by the way.
I heard craps gives you the best odds.
Well, it's their true odds. They're like one-to-one odds. But it's still just, it's crap. I mean, you're just, it's, I imagine, I can't wait to like, I'm going to Vegas.
Teach me that sometime.
Everybody, this episode comes out on Monday the 5th. I am leaving for Vegas that night.
So this is our farewell episode because Billy's going to hawk all our equipment to feed his degenerate gambling.
It doesn't even have a disk drive in the laptop, Will. What am I supposed to do with it?
I'm selling this Val Luton disc. Who wants to buy it for a Keno chip?
But he plays that guy, and that guy is he's interesting.
That's
like
Murray Hamilton. That's the mayor. But yeah.
Murray Hamilton.
Does he at first beat Eddie, and then Eddie just turns it on and wrecks him?
I think that's what happened.
And then he's writing that big check out.
It's weird, though. I felt like I didn't quite understand what was happening. It was almost like George C. Scott had been working with Murray, whatever that guy's name is in the movie, to sort of like grow Eddie. He was like sort of grooming him through like some trials here. It was an interesting scene, and in the end, all it serves is to wreck the relationship with Sarah.
Yeah.
That's the whole point
of it,
really. But
there's also, but you're right. Because
there's something going on there.
A lesser movie would just make that happen, but here they throw in some more stuff, and it's...
And you're trying to watch Eddie, like, it's exactly the same as Fats, where he's like, I can beat this guy. And this time, George C. Scott says, okay, we'll do it. And he does.
And he does. Know. I'm tempted, this was based on a novel written by a guy named Walter Tevis. And I read once a short story by Walter Tevis that was about chess, of all things.
Okay.
And it was a great story. So I feel like maybe I should read the book.
Walter Tevis chess book.
No, it was a short story.
Oh.
It was in a book.
The Queen's Gambit?
Maybe.
That's a novel.
No, this was in a short story.
Ah, well.
But it was really good. And I'm wondering,
I don't know, but the fifth result, when I Google Walter Tevis chess book, and the fifth result is bookslut.com.
That's not it.
All right. Do you want to play some trivia?
Speaking of gambling, let's play a little trivia.
Yeah. All right.
I have my post-it note.
Yeah. Guys, Will came in to record this, and then he had to run back out because
we're recording this on the snowiest night of the year.
The first snow of the year in Illinois here. We record in Rockford, Illinois. There's 9 inches of snow outside. It's preposterous, and Will had to run back inside or outside to go his post-it. He wrote it in 6-point font on a yellow post-it.
I love it. I wrote this at work.
And I'm the problem here. The problem is me and my technology.
Degenerate gambler.
I'm the problem. Okay. Let's do some trivia.
Okay.
There's a lot of things you don't know anything about, Daddy. Things you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
I don't understand.
And we're back, everybody. I wanted to bring up, Will, this movie received a lot of, The Hustler.
The Hustler.
Got a lot of nominations for Oscars.
Here we go. I'm going to read them off. This is 1961. It won for art direction, black and white, which I think back then they actually had two separate art directions and cinematography. It won for both art direction and cinematography because it looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's a great looking movie.
It does look amazing.
Here are the nominations it got. Paul Newman for actor. Piper Laurie for actress. Supporting actor Jackie Gleason, supporting actor George C. Scott. So all four leads got it. Directing for Robert Rossen.
Those are nominations or wins?
These are nominations.
Okay.
It won the two for cinematography and art direction.
Okay.
These are nominations. Directing, best picture, and screenplay.
Wow.
That is
it's like 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pile. We had a little mini discussion during the break too. I think it's fair to say Paul Newman's a good actor, but he's a great movie star.
I agree.
I almost think that maybe that falls into my Tom Hanks argument where you say, well, Tom Hanks is a good movie star, but he's not a great...
Could be.
I think Tom Hanks is evolutionary Paul Newman, though.
Well, they shared the screen in one of your favorite movies.
Yeah, not one of my favorite movies. My favorite movie
is that
of all time.
That is your lockdown favorite movie.
I've been thinking about that for 2 years, man.
Okay.
Road to Perdition is so damn good.
Go back and listen.
There's very little about it that I regret. I think it's like episode 8.
I don't know. But it's out of theaters. It'll be there.
Out of theaters? I just want to see how the Google results. Out of theaters, Road to Perdition. Episode 13.
There you go.
Yeah, I like that. That's the first result too. Our SEO is good, fellas. Okay, trivia. This is we have a special episode next week where we're going to do a co-podcast with some friends of ours. We'll get to that in a little while. But this will be the last time we do this trivia for a couple weeks.
Right.
Do you want to explain the rules?
The rules are, Billy and I each pick a movie that we either enjoy or know something about. We tell the other person. They write up five questions, and we battle it out. Winner gets to pick the movie. But we already know what next week's movie is, so this is just for... This is like Fast Eddie playing Fats.
Is it?
Billy's young, and I'm fat, so we'll say...
I don't think I'm either of those. I'm on a diet, my friend.
Slow Billy? I didn't say you were fat.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I had kids, man.
I didn't say you were fat. I said I was fat.
The movie I picked is one of my favorite movies ever, Unbreakable. I know M. Night Shyamalan gets a lot of flack, and probably rightfully so. He's produced a lot of shit.
You already bashed him on this show once.
This movie is fucking good. Unbreakable's good.
Unbreakable. Okay, and my movie, I gave you two. Which one are we doing?
Hudsucker.
Oh, with Paul Newman.
With Paul Newman.
There you go.
It's Coen Brothers?
Coen Brothers, yes.
This is a movie that you and Kevin used to talk about.
I love this. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. And people, when they make the list of the worst Coen Brothers movies, a lot of times this is at the top. And I love this movie.
It's interesting. I've never heard a human say this movie out loud besides you or Kevin.
I love it.
It doesn't
exist. One of my top 10 favorite movies easily.
Let me ask you the first question.
Okay.
What's the answer to Buzz's riddle? When is a sidewalk fully dressed?
When it's wearing Hudsucker.
That's right.
Yeah, because wearing Hudsucker jumps out the window. And
wearing is the guy.
It's the guy.
Not wearing as in W-E. It's
that's
a pun.
The pun.
It's a pun.
Yes. Okay. By the way, I want to just say this. You went into the M. Night Shyamalan. I was going to do this joke question at the beginning where I thought you were asking questions. You wanted questions about the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Never even heard of it. That's a Netflix show, right?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that shit.
It's really good. John Hamm was on it. That was the question.
Great.
I was going to ask you. Okay.
Really?
Who? M. Night Shyamalan.
I don't think it's Shyamalan. I think it's Shyamalan, but Shyamalan? I might be wrong about that.
M. Night Shyamalan is known for huge ego, and he often casts himself in his movies.
Yeah.
Who does he play in Unbreakable?
He's a drug dealer.
That's right. He is a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm. He's cool, too. Like, he steps out of line. Anyway, there's not much to it. He plays a little part in all of his movies. He overdid it in Signs. He has, like, dialogue.
He overdid it. He really overdid it in Lady in the Water.
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, it's so bad.
Okay, so 1-1.
1-1.
Let me switch over my program here. Question 2. In which city did Norville Barnes go to college?
He went to college in Muncie, Indiana.
Damn it. What school did he go to?
He went to the Muncie College of Business Administration.
God damn it.
Go Eagles.
God, I haven't seen this movie, so that was twice as annoying watching you make a little eagle out of your hand.
My go Eagles. That's ass a big hat. Part of the movie.
All right. Will's up 2-1.
Okay.
Hey.
What is the name of the gallery that Sam Jackson has in the movie? Where he displays all the really fakey looking comic
Do you mean
book
like the exhibit or the...
What's the name of his... He has like a gallery that has a name or something, his business.
Something Limited. Oh, God. I don't know. Something Limited. Limited. Unlimited. Image.
Four, three.
I don't know.
Limited edition.
Fuck! I knew that. I knew that. I didn't... All right.
Okay.
Question 3. It's 2-1. You're up. How many floors did Wearing Hudsucker fall?
Yeah! Is it 55 counting the mezzanine?
Not even close. You're off by 10.
No, 45.
Sid Musburger says that it was 44 floors, but a board member corrects him and says it's 45 if you count.
Counting
the
mezzanine.
Okay. Okay. I'm back in it. It's your first one you've gotten wrong in a month and a half.
Okay, M. Night Shyamalan. What does the M stand for?
I don't know.
That's a perfectly valid question.
That has nothing to do with the movie. I have no
idea. The name of the director.
Mister.
It's Manoj. Manoj.
No
Manoj Atwa.
God damn it. Question 4. I have 10 questions here, so I want to pick one that's hard.
Oh, good.
What is the name of the newspaper for which Amy works?
It will be the Manhattan Argus.
Ah! As Amy often reminds anyone who will listen, she won the Pulitzer.
She won the Pulitzer. See, what this movie is so good. Sometimes she actually pulls it out of a drawer and throws it on the desk.
That's the 4th question, right?
Yes.
You've got 3 of 4.
Oh, let's see. Okay. I'm trying to figure out one that you won't complain about. Okay, this is too easy, but when he's lifting weights, what does his son add to the weights that aren't weights? He wants to keep lifting.
Oh, buckets.
Paint buckets.
I thought you were asking me the poundage that he adds.
Oh.
I was like, I don't know, because there's like an extended montage in Unbreakable where he's like, what is it now? And he's like, 250, 260, you know, he just keeps adding. I was like, I don't know what the numbers are.
Counting the mezzanine.
Counting. So I got 3 for 5.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get this wrong. I have a tiebreaker question.
Okay.
So what can I ask you that you'll never, ever get? Did the Hudsucker Proxy win a Golden Palm at the Cannes Film Festival?
No, it did not.
You know what it lost to? It's okay. You still got it. I'm giving you the question. Hold on. I got a bing for you. You won.
Did it lose the Pulp Fiction?
It did lose.
I know. 1994.
That's actually legitimately good. Will wins.
Okay. Do I have to ask you one more?
No. I guess you do.
I do, technically.
Yeah. Okay.
I got a couple. You can answer which one you want. Name two other movies that Bruce Willis and Samuel Jackson co-starred in.
Pulp Fiction, Die Hard with a Vengeance.
There you go. What are the colors associated
Purple
with?
And green.
There you go.
Osteogenesis imperfecta.
That's not what I was going to ask you, but that's a good one. Can you name four other M. Night Shyamalan movies?
Yeah. The Sixth Sense. Lady in the Water. Signs. And what was the first Sixth Sense? Unbreakable. I'm just trying to think of the movies in order. Signs. In the Water. Damn it. The Last Airbender.
Yeah, actually.
Right, yeah.
Avatar, The Last Airbender. Or The Happening, which is terrible.
The Happening. That's the one with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, it's so bad.
Apparently, they were like on meth or something during that movie.
They must have been.
All like slow. And
Zooey Deschanel is like, she's clearly on something.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard both of them. It's like they're all wonked out.
It's so bad.
Hey, congratulations on your win.
Billy, why don't you tell everyone about our next episode?
So you may have heard of this new Star Wars movie that's coming out. Star Wars, it's a
I hope it's as good as The Force Awakens.
You're an idiot.
What?
It's called Rogue One, Wars story.
Did you hear, by the way, that some executive actually suggested, are we going to do a sequel to Rogue One?
A lot of people did, and it's like, yeah, no shit.
It's called Star Wars.
But they could, just to be clear, they could make it like a post-Empire sequel or a post... I mean, there is more you could do with this particular...
And believe me, they will.
I know.
They will squeeze every nickel they can out of this.
We have some friends, in particular.
Friends may be stretching it. Acquaintances?
We have a podcast called The Weirdos, where they eat pizza and talk about those pizzas.
Talk about those pizzas?
Well, it's like I've never heard of a pizza review show, but it's pretty good.
I like it. Yeah, I want them to do more episodes.
It features Andrew Wright, who was a previous guest.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show. Actual That's what friend of the show actually
like
means.
Like Paul Newman and Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's in Hudsucker Proxy, was
those,
friend of
those
the show.
Those people aren't friends of the show. They're just people.
They're friends of the show.
I mean, and they're dead, right? I mean,
Jennifer Jason Leigh isn't dead.
Well, career.
She was one of the two people who got naked in Lost Times.
And Max Gersh, who's we both know from the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to join us next week, or we're going to join them. We got to figure it out because we're going to co-release an episode on both sides.
That's right.
Where we're going to eat pizza and we're going to talk about Empire in a sort of a tradition from last year.
That's
where
right.
We talked
about Star Wars.
A New Hope.
Star Wars?
And that's so idiotic.
That 1977 movie, Star Wars. Just a preview of what you'll get next week.
My heart hurts. I can't talk to you anymore. On behalf of my good friend, Will Piper, my name is Billy Cola. We'll miss you all most of all.